Good morning. This is NBC's regular morning roundup of reports from Germany, England, and Earl Godwin in Washington. Today is the 586th day of war, and our first report comes from Berlin. Go ahead, Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is Charles Lanius in Berlin. While jubilant Germans were celebrating their first victories in Greece and Yugoslavia, the Royal Air Force brought the war home to Berlin early this morning. Several big fires were started in the Staatsopera, where just the other day I saw an excellent German opera, was set afire. That's the opera which is under the patronage of Reich Marshal Hermann Göring. This morning I set out in a taxicab to make the rounds, but the police wouldn't let me get within three blocks of the bombed area. The famous Prussian Staatslibrary was hit, but I couldn't get close enough to see just how extensive the damage was. Several times I saw British planes caught in the blinding glare of the stabbing searchlights winging across the city from the north. They looked like big silver butterflies as they plowed through the anti-aircraft barrage and seemed to be flying lower than usual to me. Oh, the high command report hasn't been released when I started to speak. A special bulletin says that high explosive and incendiary bombs were dropped on residential quarters, but that more important objectives weren't hit. The Germans say that two hospitals were hit, and that there were a number of casualties, that is, several wounded and killed. The Germans claim that their British attackers suffered what they describe as extraordinary losses. Before the RAF planes reached the capital, it said, 11 of them were shot down by anti-aircraft artillery or by night fighters. Fresh news of the fighting in the southeast is lacking today because of the tardiness of the high command report. But other reports reaching Berlin indicate that now that the first objectives of the German army have been reached, they are continuing to advance. A wedge has been driven into the Yugoslavian town of Skopje, on the way to the Albanian frontier. If the Germans reach Albania and are united with the Italian forces there, they will have completely cut Yugoslavia off from Greece. The Greek army in eastern Greece is said to have surrendered after the Germans blasted their way through to Salonika. This means that practically all of Thrace, clear to the Turkish frontier, is in German hands. The German Northern Army has taken Marburg. The fall of Salonika and the advance of the German armies into Yugoslavia is naturally played up big in the Berlin press and radio. The Greeks are complimented for putting up a stiff fight, but in spite of what is called a gallant defense, they finally had to give way. The Deutsche Allgemeine Zeitung say that the Greeks are brave and the German soldiers have lost some of their comrades on the field. But the paper concludes the same spirit that smashed the Maginot Line has now broken the Metaxas Line. The Volkische Beobachter, the party paper, declares that although British troops are in Greece, they are in the second line as usual and not taking an actual part in the hard fighting. Morning newspapers here have another story to tell. When trouble broke out in Yugoslavia, many men of German descent went into hiding. When the Germans broke through in the region of Marburg in the north of Yugoslavia on the German frontier, these men put on their swastika armbands and went out to meet the reconnoitering German units. On the Wilhelmstrasse, Prime Minister Winston Churchill's speech yesterday came in for some ironic panning. His statement that Foreign Minister Anthony Eden and General Dill had tried to prevent the spread of war in the Balkans just drew a big laugh in official circles. An official asserted that whenever things go badly for Churchill, he invariably talks all the bigger. He added that probably the only honest thing Churchill said was that the United States was Britain's only salvation. But he declared the question in the German official circles is how much can the United States deliver to England in view of the battle in the Atlantic? It was also said that there's no question in the German viewpoint about Belgrade being an open city. A city is only an open city, according to the Germans, when it has no military garrisons, no military facilities such as factories and barracks, and no transportation facilities that can be used for military purposes. That's how official circles here define an open city, and Belgrade doesn't meet these requirements. At the same time, it was denied that the Yugoslavian capital had capitulated. And on the Wilhelmstrasse today, there's no information to lead to the belief that the Soviet Russia and Japan have signed a non-aggression pact. Apparently, Japanese Foreign Minister Matsuoka is still in Moscow. Yesterday, he had a talk lasting 3 hours with Soviet Foreign Commissar Molotov. Berlin papers tell us this morning that 2 out of 5 persons accused of looting houses damaged in air raids were sentenced to death by a special court. The other 3 persons were given prison sentences, And from Holland comes the story of a man and a woman who were sentenced to death for hiding British soldiers. 11 others accused of the same offense were given jail terms. This is Charles Lanius in Berlin. I now return you to NBC in New York.
From the Associated Press, Rome, the Italian High Command said today Italian troops continued their penetration of Yugoslavia from northern Yugoslav and eastern Albanian fronts in a drive to join hands with German columns moving from the east. Next on our schedule is a report from our staff covering the war in the British capital. Will you go ahead, London?
This is London. Ed Doyce speaking. After the hard knocks administered by Mr. Churchill yesterday, the newspapers this morning again strike an optimistic note, at least the papers with the largest circulations. There is a tendency to minimize the importance of the German capture of Salonika and Derna. The public is assured that the British and the Greeks will make a real stand on the Mount Olympus line, and that the British will hold Tobruk in Cyrenaica. The first phase of the campaign is over, it is said. The second and real phase is about to begin. The News Chronicle cartoonist pictures the ruins of the Acropolis with big black Nazi bombers overhead. The caption is, Kultur comes to Greece. Some political minds, however, see the German campaigns in Greece and Yugoslavia merely as episodes in a longer and larger battle. They point out that the German attacks everywhere in this war have been pincer movements, small pincer movements within larger movements, and these in turn encompassed by yet larger pincers. At this moment, the small pincers is working in Greece and Yugoslavia. This, however, is enveloped by a larger pincers, which may eventually take in Egypt, Turkey, and the Near East. And this, in turn, comes within a yet larger pincers, the right arm of which has bitten into the Atlantic coast of North Africa, and the left arm has established itself on the Black Sea coast of Romania. The people who visualize things on a scale as vast as this point to Hitler's avowed intention of reconquering the Roman Empire for Mussolini before Hitler conquers the world. In conquering the Roman Empire, Hitler will also have conquered Italy. The thing for the British to do, therefore, is to attack the sharp infiltrating edges of the biggest pincers before the Germans are ready. In other words, they believe Britain ought to drive the Germans out of French Morocco now, even at the risk of war with Vichy. There are no indications of this, however, and that is why there is dismay at Mr. Churchill's new warning against the German invasion. Such a warning can only mean that the bulk of the British land forces will be kept in England, where there are too many troops already. Great interest is once more concentrated on Soviet-Russian developments. The only ray of optimism seems to come from Moscow. The length of Matsuoka's conversations with Stalin and other Kremlin leaders is giving great satisfaction. So did the copiously quoted significant comment in the Red Star, the official organ of the Red Army, which stated that the center of gravity in the war has definitely shifted from west to east. If that is the Soviet diagnosis of the war on land, and it is the land forces of Germany that count for Russia, it may mean that Stalin is preparing to draw the inescapable conclusion of entering the war not on the side of Britain, but against Germany. Attention is also focused on the comments of the well-informed Turkish political commentator, the parliamentary deputy Yalcin. In the newspaper Yeni Sabah, he hints that Russian intervention is at hand. The Soviet-Yugoslavia Pact, he writes, suggests that German-Russian relations are entering an interesting stage which promises new developments. In Iraq, which is the pincers' outpost like Morocco, a special session of parliament has been called for today to elect a new prince regent for the boy king Faisal II. The Royal Air Force last night attacked Berlin with incendiaries and high explosives. The attack lasted nearly 3 hours, and large fires were started in the center of the city. Emden and other places in northwest Germany were also raided. RAF fighter patrols were again active over occupied France during the night. German raids on Britain last night were mainly directed against a town in the Midlands and districts in the northeast England. It is expected that casualties may prove to be heavy. Damage was considerable in both areas, says the morning communique. 11 German bombers were shot down during these raids, 10 by RAF fighters and the 11th by anti-aircraft fire. I return you now to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
Now Earl Godwin reports from our newsroom in Washington.
Good morning, folks. You know, Charles Lanius in Berlin hit the American story right the nail on the head in the American story when he quoted someone there saying, how much aid can the United States give in view of the battle to the Atlantic? That's got Washington worried, too, and see how close we're coming to, well, to the thought of war when you realize that Senator Josh Lee, Oklahoma Democrat, is prepared today to advance the suggestion that the United States Navy take over the duty of guarding the British naval base in Singapore in the Far East. That, of course, if it could happen, would release a big slice of British Navy to attend to their own business of convoying the goods they're getting from us under the Lend-Lease plan. American-made planes helped the bombing of Berlin, we hear. American goods are en route to Britain and Yugoslavia. The Germans say the Yugoslavs will never get this stuff. They've got it all mapped out and blocked off. The war news depresses and worries this town today. The president was scheduled today to send to the Senate his message asking permission to acquire by legal peaceful means those 39 Danish ships and certain other foreign ships. The Danes say that that method's okay with them, because if they, the Danes, offered to give or sell these ships, the Nazis would be right on their neck in Denmark and make it hot for the Danes at home. But the president may not ask for this business today because the Senate may not attend to any business, simply gather to adjourn immediately out of respect to the much-loved late Senator Morris Shepherd, the Texan who died yesterday and saddened so many of us here. That Military Affairs Committee, which is delving into the defense program, did not get very far with the Secretary of Labor, Madam Perkins, on the matter of communistic influences in labor as a strong element in the strike situation. So the committee may have the Dyes Committee investigator before it. That was J.B. Matthews, the head investigator for them, and also J. Edgar Hoover, who, as you know, is the head G-man. One thing the Dyes Committee has, which is public record. It has practically all the older publications in communist and other newspapers publishing and in many instances boasting of communist activity and communist aims by certain labor leaders or agitators. That was before communism began to be so important to congressional investigators. The Dyes Committee quietly went to work to comb the country. Public libraries and old bookshops, and according to Mr. Dyes, who told me this the other day, the committee has a million names of folks that are presumed to be or had been in the Communist Party. I do not believe that J. Edgar Hoover will tell the committee all he knows, not out in public. There have been several attempts to make the G-men turn over all their records, but this has been so that some of the shadowy half-world characters who are leading double lives, spying undercover, making believe to be regular, routine Americans otherwise, could find out just exactly what Hoover does have on them. Well, Mr. Hoover is not going to tell, and the president is going to back him up in that. Meantime, unless there's a break in one or two of these big strikes, Congress will go galloping down the road to compulsory anti-strike legislation and possibly the taking over of plants and industries which fail to produce. Incidentally, here's a little something for you doctors to think about. The Army wants so many medical men, it's causing the medical profession concern. The Army wants thousands of doctors, and England has sent over here asking for 1,000 trained physicians now. Earl Godwin says goodbye. That's the news from Washington at this time.
We invite our listeners to remain tuned to this station so that we can keep them informed on each important development. This is the National Broadcasting Company.